Welcome to the Bird Dog Podcast, where we explore the ins and outs of bird dog training, share captivating hunting stories, and review the latest gear and apparel. Join us as we honor our passion for these remarkable animals and the unforgettable experiences they bring into our lives. This is the Bird Dog Podcast. Hey folks, welcome to the Bird Dog Podcast. I'm Tyce Erickson, and I'll be your host today as we bring you this podcast, and hope you are having a great day. I have my son on here with me. His name is Crew. Crew, do you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Well, I've been on the podcast a little bit before, but I'm just Tyce's son, and I like bird hunting and upland game and waterfowl and big game hunting, so I like outdoors and everything about it.
Thanks, son. It's fun to have you on the podcast, and it's fun to talk with you, and thanks for being on. We are actually, if you can hear some road noise and car noise, there's a reason for that. We are actually driving back home from
South Dakota.
South Dakota. So we made a trip out here to South Dakota to Pheasant Fest, and at the same time we picked up a new puppy for ourselves, a filled bred golden that we're excited about. Familiar with the bloodlines, comes out of two master hunter parents, and she's going to be hopefully part of our breeding program one day. So we're thinking about calling her Covey. As we were leaving Pheasant Fest, there were some young women that were asking, they saw the puppy and they were saying, what are you going to name it? And he said, what do you guys think we should name it? And they said Covey and Quail. And I was like, you know, I kind of like Covey. So we were kind of thinking we're going to name this little girl Covey. So I think it's kind of a cool name. I've never trained a Covey, a dog named Covey, and I think it'll be fun. So let us know what you guys think. Some of you have never heard of Pheasant Fest, and maybe some of you have. So just kind of go into detail. Pheasant Fest this year was in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. So from Utah, our home state, it was about an 18-hour drive, roughly, with stops. And so it was a good drive all the way through across the state of Wyoming and pretty much across the whole state of South Dakota. Now, I've been invited to go out to South Dakota before and hunt pheasants and upland birds before, but I have never made it to South Dakota. And so I kind of wanted to see what South Dakota looked like. I kind of want to experience that road trip and then check out Pheasant Fest. So again, Pheasant Fest is put on by Pheasants Forever and Quail Forever. They're an organization here in the United States that supports conservation for, obviously, it sounds like, you know, pheasants and quail. So, and keeping our upland game heritage alive. So pretty cool event. It was pretty big. It kind of took up three areas of a building. I don't know how many booths there were there. I could check and see, but quite a few booths, a lot of attendees. I know just in the live auction yesterday, they had kind of the numbers they raised, but I know they raised $85,000 in just the live auction. The numbers aren't posted for the raffles, but then imagine for the auction hunts that they had last night at the banquet. I'm just guessing, kind of thinking about the hunts and stuff like that, I'm guessing they raised another $100,000 roughly in those hunts. And so I imagine all said and done, there's probably a raising of money for conservation. I would say around 200,000 or more just in this one banquet that they had for conservation. So that was cool to see people putting money kind of where their mouth is, you know, getting behind wildlife conservation. You know, when we obviously support conservation and, you know, we want it for hunting, but also supports a lot of other wildlife. So I don't know anyone out there besides hunters that put more money into conservation. That conservation not only pays for animals we get to hunt, but it also pays for, but also obviously when we make areas to hunt wildlife, it brings other wildlife right in, songbirds, and it, you know, obviously trees, and when we take farmland and put it back to prairie, you know, it just a whole mecca of wildlife inhabits those spaces. So it was pretty cool that the key speaker they had at the banquet last night, or one of them, was Donnie Vincent. And Donnie Vincent's a guy that I don't know him personally. I did meet him last night, got to take a picture with him. Just seems like a really cool guy. Has the love of the outdoors, like all of us do, and wants to see that be handed down for future generations. But he just told some of his hunting experiences, and he was a great storyteller. Made you feel like you were just right there. So, humble guy, super good guy, just a really, really cool experience. So, if you guys don't know who Donnie Vincent is, he does a lot of big game hunting in the Northwest and Alaska, and documents and videos a lot of that. So shout out to him. He's a go-getter. He's getting a little bit older like myself, but he's still in great shape and still looks like he's crushing the hills and getting after it. So the banquet was really cool, just to see that money being raised. Just kind of talk you through a lot of the booths. I'll kind of let crew talk here. What booths did you see what kind of stood out to you? Or is any of them that stood out to you that you liked, or you're like, I saw a lot of this or a lot of that? Just kind of share with the audience kind of what you saw.
Well, there's a little bit of Ruffland kennel crates. Some of you guys might know them. There's Crispy boots, and there's also Purina Pro Plan, and a lot of your good dog food brands. And
I saw a lot of, yeah, there were a lot of dog foods there that people were trying to get out to the market. Pro Plan was a big sponsor of it. Purina was a big sponsor.
And then there was also, there's a lot of booths there. Obviously, I can't keep track of all of them, but
yeah,
there's a lot of, like, drinking energy. Well, there's a little bit of that. And there is tour, like, guiding.
Outfitters.
Yeah, outfitters. And just a lot of the stuff that.
A lot of guns.
Yeah, a lot of shotguns and some other guns.
Yeah, so they had one building that was kind of set aside a lot. Had like even just like agronomy and stuff for, because there's a lot of farmers and stuff like that attend to it, or conservationists. So obviously with upland birds, they live on the land and they need that habitat that really basically provides a home or a shelter for them. So a large part of one section was really working with farmers and how to help their land become more conducive for upland game. And there's a lot of booths and companies that could help with that, you know, and maybe weed control, or just trying to, we didn't look at all those super heavy because we personally don't have a ton of land that we're obviously trying to change into upland game habitat. But that was really cool. And then the other two sections were a lot of dog stuff. So I'd say there's a lot of, you know, firearms, there's a lot of jackets, vests for up.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of, there's some clothes booths and like Bass Pro Shops was there.
Yeah, Shills. Because it is called Pheasant Fest, it's mostly geared towards upland game hunting. So really anything that's geared around, I'd say, dogs, guns, and hunting equipment for upland game.
Yeah.
So there was some waterfowl stuff, like Banded was there. Trying to think of some of the other, you know, of course, some of your firearms.
Lucky Duck.
Lucky Duck was there. And so it was cool just to, you know, but again, they carry just dog stuff. Not really. There was a little bit of big game hunting. Usually the big game hunting was like, hey, we do pheasant hunting plus whitetail hunting. And you could kind of come and hunt the ranches and stuff like that. But again, it was geared. So I'd say you had a lot of outfitters that were, you know, provided land for pheasant hunting. Now there's, in South Dakota, there is public ground. Again, I haven't hunted it, so, but I have a friend that lives out there in Sioux Falls, and he has hunted the public ground. You still have to work for your birds. Now, it's some beautiful country as we came across from the Black Hills. You kind of have this roly, just kind of describe it. Just it, in Wyoming, it kind of goes from sagebrush, and then as you start going towards the Black Hills, it turns more towards grassland. And then you kind of get from around the Black Hills, it's these rolling kind of hills with pine trees on it. We're just coming up on the Black Hills right now and just kind of describing what you're seeing. And you have these rolling hills with valleys and grassland, and where the rivers are, there's, you know, cottonwoods down through the bottoms. And just a really beautiful part of our country that that's cool to see how things kind of turn to grass. And then as you start leaving Rapid City, South Dakota, and head out, it turns more plains and kind of cropland, and but there's still grass and trees mixed in, patches of trees. For some reason in my head, I always thought it'd be a lot flatter. I think when I've gone through Kansas, it seems like it's very flat. But South Dakota has, actually, it's very kind of a rolling topography with a lot of grass and cropland. Today it was kind of stormy as we're heading back, and there's all these water holes too. There's all these water holes out mixed into the cropland, which, according to my friends, says a lot of farmers are draining them and stuff, which gets rid of that riparian habitat around those wetlands, which produces space for upland birds, and that's affecting the bird populations. But on those water holes, they were just loaded. Most of them were just loaded up with geese, Canadian geese, and ducks. And it was really fun to see that. Just tons of ducks, tons of geese. On our way out, we only saw, I think, one really big flock of snow geese. There had to have been at least 10,000 birds in it or more. Huge flock of snow geese. And then as we were coming back today, it was windy. Storm front was pushing through, and we saw tons of snow geese. Just, you know, we wouldn't have to go very far, maybe another 5-10 minutes down the road, there's another big flock of snow geese, or there's a flock of snow geese. Saw two or three groups that had, you know, 2,000-3,000 birds in it, landed in fields right off the road. So it was really cool to see, you know, be in the heartland and see heartland of our grain fields and our water and see that waterfowl. I was a little disappointed. You know, you hear stories of South Dakotas and the Dakotas, and in my mind, I just painted this vision. I'm going to be driving even on the main highway, and I look over and there's just like pheasants walking along the road. And unfortunately, I saw one dead pheasant on the highway, and I did not see one pheasant along the road, which was pretty, honestly, it was kind of disheartening. Not granted, I know they're probably smarter, you know, they probably get educated, not run along the highway, but you just think of the Dakotas, there's like, they're like grasshoppers is what you're hoping, you know, kind of almost everywhere, even along the roadsides, or you'll see pheasants here and there. I didn't see any. I was hoping kind of as we're starting to hit spring, I'd see roosters out in the fields croaking, stuff like that. But I did go one day with a friend. We kind of drove out in the country, did a little training with his dog, and I didn't see a pheasant. Saw some whitetail, which was kind of cool. Tons of waterfowl on the water, but the pheasants I didn't see. So I was a little bummed on that, not seeing that. Now I know the birds, I'm sure, are still there, but kind of talking to people that live out here and even just listening to the presenters at the booth, there is a push to bring wild populations of pheasants in South Dakota. They are struggling from what they have been. Now, the population estimates I've heard is you have about 1.5 million birds are killed a year in South Dakota. That's a lot of birds. But 1 million of those are preserved or planted game farm birds. They're not wild birds. So only about 500,000 are actually truly wild birds. And those lands that have wild populations that can be hunted are pretty special, and you pay a premium to go out and hunt full-on wild birds. You can pay, one guided outfit, it was $800 a day to, and you could kill three birds per person. So obviously if you have a group, you can kill that amount of birds. But it's just the price is still not cheap to come hunt South Dakota. But talking to my friend, and he hunts the walk-in access areas, he has to still hunt and he works hard, but it sounds like if you come out and you have a good dog and you put in the time, he's like, I can pretty much have chances at limits every day if I work hard, and he may cover 6, 7, 8, 10 miles. This is not like easy work, but you can find birds. I'm sure it's still a lot better than Utah, where our bird populations, at least pheasants, are very much struggling. But I don't know. I was just, you guys will have to let me know what you think. If you have hunted South Dakota, shoot me an email, DM me, give me your opinion, see if I'm completely wrong on this. But just being at Pheasant Fest, there's a big push to leave more natural ground or bring it back onto the landscape so pheasants can be forever or quail can be forever. I talked to my friend Tanner as we were out there. He works in agronomy and soil and helps actually where they put in pipelines, stuff like that, to actually put natural habitat back in there and seed and all that stuff. And they work closely with Pheasants Forever. But he has never seen a bobwhite quail in South Dakota. And to me, that's wrong. Like, there should be quail, there should be pheasants, and we're doing something wrong. We need to leave more linear edges along the fields to allow these birds to survive. And so hopefully farmers can get on board, can keep those barriers, those buffers, and not clean their fields so dang clean with their tractors that no feed is, that there's nothing left for the birds to hide or nest in. And so we can't have these populations that still exist and future generations can enjoy them. So I'm kind of on my soapbox, but I'm just giving you kind of just my feel, what I saw and talking to people, that it's kind of a little scary. And it's not like the future is bright, because there's a lot of people who want to get behind it, but we need more people to get behind it to be able to keep these populations where they should be. Because as everyone knows, and you hear North Dakota, South Dakota, you think pheasant capital of the world, like, you go there, you're going to see birds. And unfortunately, there's so many people that love this resource. The supply and demand is, the supply is less than the demand. Less than the demand. And so people are going out there, but the private land that people are hunting, there's just not enough wild birds. to provide enough for hunters to come out there. So places are having to, they call them preserves out there, they're having to put birds on the landscape to help out with that, because of the bulk of the land, South Dakota, at least in a lot of the areas I was at, a lot of it is private property, and the farmers are draining a lot of the water. They're cleaning it off with the crops, because that's where they make their livelihood, right? Is corn and soybean, and they're taking out the CRP grass and those things, and the birds just have nowhere to live. So they just die. There's nowhere for them to get out of the, you know, to make nests and to raise babies. And so we really need to, you know, I don't know, try to get behind it as much as we can. I was talking to one of the guys who worked with Pheasants Forever. He's going to get me in touch with, there's no one over the state of Utah. I want to get involved with Quail Forever. I think Utah has a lot of potential for our quail population. Unfortunately, I think our pheasant populations, I have a hard time seeing them come back. The state puts out a lot of pheasants on our public grounds, and they're just decimated. They're not used to being hunted. People come out and hunt them because that's the reason we put them out. And the birds of prey, they pick them off, and just nothing really stays on the landscape. We need to trap more our foxes, our skunks, maybe do a tail bounty. I know they're doing that out here, which is like $10 a tail to trap these, you know, skunks and raccoons and turn those in, which is really cool. Have kids and youth get behind trapping these animals so they're not destroying our nest. And they have, I think it's the state, don't quote me on that, is paying a bounty for these predators, and it's just, and to hopefully save some of these birds. So I think Utah itself, lately I've seen the valley quail when they've been released in certain areas. I had a friend that worked and did some dedicated hunter hours, went and trapped valley quail on the benches where they couldn't be hunted, and transplanted them out into the country, and I've seen these populations do awesome. So it kind of gives me hope for our upland game populations that even around out in the country, in huntable areas, these populations are still making it, and the birds of prey are not getting them. So I personally feel we really need to focus more on chukar. We need to focus on quail. So I'm going to get involved with Quail Forever. So if any of you guys are interested in doing that, reach out to me and see if we can kind of put a chapter together here in Utah and really try to put some quail on some landscapes where, you know, we can go out and hunt them and have fun with it and get some good dog work and not have to hunt everything, you know, like chukar or grouse on the steep mountain slopes. Everyone physically can't always do that, but quail and pheasants inhabit a lot of the same territories, and so I think we really have a lot of quality habitat for valley quail and gamble quail in Utah. So I think, and there's nothing happening right now with that in Utah. So as far as I know, or as far as Quail Forever or Pheasant Forever, there's nothing happening. If you guys have heard something, let me know, or if the Fish and Game are doing something besides trapping and maybe moving some quail for dedicated hours, which I think is great. We need to do more of that. But we need to do more. I believe we need to raise quail and get them out into the landscape. I think I think our land can hold that. That's just, again, this is Tice's opinion and just seeing what I'm seeing out in the field as I'm out working dogs and stuff like that. So anyhow, it was great. There was a lot of great booths were there. You know, Final Rise out of Utah, give Matt Davis a shout out there. They had a booth there with Onyx and an Upland Gun Company. There's a lot of cool companies, but again, it was primarily dog training equipment. DT was there, Garmin was there, Dogtra was there. And then they had an area where they had a lot of different breeds of dogs, We saw Musterlanders, large, small, German. They had wire hairs, they had Vizslas, they had setters, just kind of these clubs or organizations representing a bunch of different breeds. So that was pretty cool. They had stuff for youth crew. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
The youth section.
So you could take your kids out there, and they had a little youth section with some fun stuff.
Yeah, so there's probably about 50 yards long, just a little small spot. And there's just this section in the middle where you could get activities and coloring. And then there's also some activities. There was some tic-tac-toe trivia that me and my dad did. And then there's also matching stuff with and then there's some games and some, snacks. Yeah, that was mostly it was just a little tiny spot. So
yeah, it wasn't huge. It was a room, I don't know how big the room was, but they had a bunch of booths, and they did, I feel like they did still try to cater to kids,
Yeah.
They had tons of stickers. All the booths had candy and stickers, and and the people there were really good about talking to crew and, hey, how's it going, bud? And trying to, involve him. I was impressed with that. I thought that was cool. And then today they had different booths set up around the show floor where it was for kids 18 and under. They had cookies and Rice Krispie treats and
a pretzel mix.
Pretzel mix that you could, for the kids to eat and stuff like that. So they did try to cater to the youth. Again, who doesn't? There was a lot of dogs at different booths, which was fun. You walk around, and people had dogs in their booths. So
go pet some dogs if you wanted.
Go pet the dogs and see the different dog training equipment. So overall, I felt like it was a really positive experience. Size-wise, I didn't know what to think. It's as big as an area, I guess, as you can. Biggest gathering of upland hunters, they were saying, in the world at one time. So pretty cool to just see people come out that are like-minded. They love dogs, they love birds, they love conservation, they love guns, and just everything that's mixed in behind that. So I didn't see any groundbreaking products. There were some cool different products that we did see, but I guess being in the training world, I didn't see anything that was wow, I've never, ever seen this before. But there's a lot of, cool leashes and collars and things you could, just training equipment. People have their own custom little training equipment, stuff like that. They did have three different seminar stages. One was the dog training seminar stage, which we went and listened to some professional trainers also share stuff about training. I like that stage. They had the training stage, and then they had the conservation stage, and then they had, I think, another stage where they talked. Well, there was other things.
Wasn't there four stages? Because they had, it was broken into those three sections, and there's one stage in the middle section, another in the right section, if you would, and then there's two in the corners of the left far section. Right?
Is there two stages there?
Yeah.
I don't know. Were they combined or?
No, they're separate in the corners.
But anyways, there's plenty to do. We were there for 2 half days basically and 1 full day. And I definitely felt like we saw everything, in a day and a half or so. But if you want to talk to people and get to know people, and you're really into looking at products or listening to the different seminars, there was always something to do, even if you were there, you know, every day. So, anyhow, that was pretty much Pheasant Fest. This next year, they announced it's going to be in Kansas City. I think I didn't get the exact dates, but if you just put Pheasant Fest in, it's going to be in Kansas City next year under Pheasant, or it'll propagate and you can see the dates. So I'd recommend putting it on your calendar if it's something you're passionate about, upland game hunting, and you really love it. I'd recommend coming out, checking it out. There was probably four or five different dog training booths there. Different trainers were there. Again, I mean, if you're into dogs, you're into upland game hunting, you're into conservation, you're into anything in that world, that's what Pheasant Fest is about. So I had not ever been out to it, so it was fun to come check it out for the first time and join up with those like-minded individuals and have a good experience and see South Dakota and see the wildlife that was here and see the rolling hills and see everything that it was about. So the people were very kind. They were very welcoming. They were, you know, just a good group of people to be around. So before we wrap this up, Crew, is there anything else that came to your mind about Pheasant Fest or how you felt about it or thought about it?
Well, I mean, like my dad said, like, it was really fun for kids. Well, me and, I think it was pretty well put together, and they had a couple food places around just if you got hungry, and then they had stuff, a little bit of things that you could, like, couple giveaways and just free things on a table that you could snag, and it was just really fun. So
Thanks, Crew. Thanks for coming on the podcast and sharing with everyone your thoughts. Thanks everyone for listening.
Thank you
again. If you have any comments or things you'd like us to talk about, go ahead and shoot us a question at thebirddogpodcast@gmail.com, or you can DM us on Instagram at @thebirddogpodcast. Go ahead and follow us everywhere you can. Share with your friends. And if you're interested in training, you can check us out at utahbirddogtraining.com. That's our training website. And you can also go to fieldbredgoldenretrievers.com. That's our breeding website. If you're looking for a really nice hunting golden that's healthy, has good drive, has proven bloodlines. And that again was one of our main things here to come out. We were picking up a puppy out of from Minneapolis, and the breeder drove down and met us and brought the pup to us, and we were able to kind of time it just right, kill two birds with one stone, check out Pheasant Fest and get a puppy and bring it home. And we went into Pheasant Fest after she dropped the puppy off, and Crew had all the people swarming him, all the cute girls swarming him with that puppy. So if you're into that, take a puppy to Pheasant Fest and you'll be a popular person. So it was a fun experience, great people. We're on the long haul back now, back home. We had a storm come through, but looks like the roads are clear and we're gonna drive as far as we can here tonight. So anyhow, thanks everyone for listening. Have a great day, and we'll see you in the next show.